Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of August 12th. I'm John Gibson, and on a steamy Sunday night, with me is Jim Allen. How you doing, bud?
I'm not certain I like to be associated with steamy Sunday nights. I mean, there's some sort of
sultry. How's that? Sultry.
Sultry, yeah. I feel like I should be wearing
something. At least that's
more
romantic.
Appropriate.
It's more romantic sounding, yeah, right?
Is it? Okay, well... Well, that's, you know, the first thing that comes to my mind on the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast is romance. Okay, I'm doing good. How you doing, man?
Hey, man. After last week and what you said about my watching Munetaka Murakami swing late at night and all that stuff, you would think romance is all you're thinking about.
And yeah, well...
Maybe not. All right. Well,
maybe not.
I tell you,
You watch the Swallows much. All thoughts of excitement go right out the window.
Hey, I watch them and I'm excited. I'm just, you know, maybe it's because I'm not a fan. I always know that the other team has a chance to come back.
Indeed. There's always that possibility.
There is. And they seem to make up a lot of different ways to let teams back into games, but it has really been fun. It's fun to watch those games too, so I'm having a good time.
Well, I like the one thing I like about the Swallows is listening to manager Junji Ogawa's creative reasonings for the losses. You know, that was like the one Nishimura came up with a couple of weeks ago, the one about how they lost 9-2 because in the second inning they failed to sacrifice.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Well, there was one the other day. The Swallows got their heads handed to them. And, oh, I think the thing that we regret the most was Coco's errant throw in the second inning that moved the batter from first to second, where he was in scoring position. Another one-sided loss, like that was going to be the difference in the game.
Right. Well, you know, that one play can really make a difference in a blowout.
Well, it can. I mean, I don't want to, you know, but that's, you know, that's such the Japanese dogma. You know, if you play small ball properly, then
you only have small
losses. You'll put pressure on the opponent. You know, you keep the game score. They'll make mistakes. You know, they'll be... Nope, these guys aren't under pressure. They're professional athletes. Give me a break. I mean, they put pressure on themselves, but give me a break.
All right.
I'm so tired of that stuff.
All right. Well, don't get tired.
Okay, my rant is over.
We're just starting out. Don't get tired already. On this week's show, we've got a chat with Jabari Blash of Rock 10. We're going to talk about the Eagles. We're going to discuss a possible future rule change. We've got some notes and some high heat, so let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
All right, folks, so you might notice I have a really sultry voice going to this evening, and that's because I have some kind of infection.
Those are the word, that was the word that came to mind, yep.
I have some kind of chest infection or something, not a cold, but enough to have my voice changed here, so I'll try to get through the show here tonight, and by next week, it'll be the normal me, hopefully. So bear with me, please bear with me. So I went out to Cebu Dome / MetLife Dome this past Wednesday, and I saw a lot of reporters I hadn't seen in a while, and I also had the opportunity, since I was out there with the Lions, to talk to Zach Neale and Kyle Martin, and both of those guys were very positive in their responses to us, and I think their recent appearances on JBW, and they expressed interest in talking again to us, so that was really fun. They were really, really genuine guys. In fact, Kyle like hopped over. He was just about into the it was during their warm-up, and they were both coming back from center field right before they after they had done their pre-game workouts, and Kyle came back around and back out to the field to chat with me, so that was really nice. It was really nice. But I was there to talk to Jabari Blash of the Eagles, and what a life for this guy. He was born in the Virgin Islands. And then he played in his major league organizations. He played for the San Diego and Anaheim teams. where could it be better weather-wise?
Miami, probably. You know, can't have everything.
You can't have everything. So, yeah, maybe Miami, I suppose. But he's a first-year import player, Jabari is. He like I said, played with the Angels organization last before he came here to Rakuten. And earlier this year, I got to meet him. Again, it was out there at Cebu. And we were talking about the fact that the reason he came to Japan is because he wasn't getting a chance to play in the outfield. There were too many Angels in the outfield, he said. Well, actually, I said that.
Okay, I gathered, yeah.
And so he ended up getting an offer out here and making the jump out here to the Eagles. And he has a really great and fun way of speaking. I like the word choices he uses. And you'll hear in the interview that the Eagles staff actually came up to us and said, you can't do interviews until Jabari's pregame practice routine is over. So what you'll hear is you'll notice a splice, and that it's very quiet at the beginning of the interview, and then all of a sudden things kind of pick up a little bit noise-wise. But that's just because we had a staff member come up and tell us to get the interview done after he's finished his workout. So that's what we did. So I just spliced them together rather than tell you guys that we had a break in there. So here's Jabari. All right, we're here with Jabari Blash of the Rakuten Eagles. Thank you very much for taking the time to join us. Appreciate it.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right, so first, how did you come up with that unique batting style?
Well, in 2000, I think it was 17, I went to play winter ball in Mexico. And I wanted to change my stance. That year, I had a toe-tap wide stance, and I wanted to create it at leg kick and hit the ball more in the air, you know, get more lift. And I realized the closer my feet got, the less my head moved going into contact. So that was the base that I started. And then I kind of, you know, molded it to where it felt right. You know, I feel like every hitter should be their own coach in a way. And, you know, I did something that felt right, and it panned out.
Okay, yeah, it's very unique, and it's fun to watch. It's fun to watch you hit, too, and you were doing well, and the team's been doing well. So I've asked this before to players who have come and gone in MPB, but I wanted to ask you specifically because of your stance, you maybe have to make more adjustments. But how do you get used to, and how do you learn and familiarize yourself with all the pitchers you face?
Well, you know, we face these guys so often that, especially with the league, you know, playing interleague so much, that you get really familiar and you get an idea of how the team pitches you, you know, the different catchers pitches you. So you get real familiar with the guys.
Just through seeing them a lot of times. But what about the bullpen guys? Now, some of those guys come up from the farm.
Usually a team has a specific philosophy on how to pitch certain hitters, you know, and I kind of stick to my strength at the same time and not being so much worried about what they're going to do, but sticking with my strengths at the same time.
Okay, now you're working alongside Zealous Wheeler, a guy who's kind of a veteran here in MPB. How has he helped you with your adjustments and your getting accustomed to MPB?
Oh, man, he's been...
He's been useless, right?
No. You know, he's been great with just information, how to kind of cope with things, you know, what to expect, you know, how to endure this season, you know, and just, you know, things, places to go, food to eat. So he's been instrumental for sure.
What kind of detail can you offer in terms of how he's helping you?
Well, he's had more experience with these pitchers, so he knows them very well and how they attack foreign hitters, because a lot of teams pitch foreign hitters specifically. And but he's a wealth of information when it comes to the Japanese way of things, and because there's not much that resembles American baseball over here, so he's been a huge help in helping me kind of find my way around.
All right. So we talked about it. You were even teasing me before we started the interview that the first time I met you, I was talking about how you guys didn't have your top two pitchers, and that was going to be hard. I didn't say it was going to be impossible. But you guys have come this far. You had a hot start. There's a lot of roster change, a lot of lineup change that's been going on recently. So how do you evaluate the season so far?
Well, like I told you earlier this year, you know, we had some really good bats in this lineup. And, you know, things came around. You know, we've been swinging well. And the days that we didn't really swing that well, our pitching staff picked us up. So we've just been working cohesively very well. And, you know, getting lucky at times as well.
Well, that's important. I mean, you know, they always say in the box score it looks like a line drive, but don't matter how you get them as long as you win it, right?
Exactly.
All right, now the Lions are they're right there in the standings, and everything is real tight in the Pacific League, unlike it has been in the past. So how much do you pay attention to the standings, and how much do you say, oh, we got to beat this team and we got to beat that team?
Well, you want to win every game, you know, in the season, but this Lions team is a tough team to beat. You know, they swing the bats very well, and they score a lot of runs. So, honestly, I think this is one of the tougher teams to beat. But, you know, all these teams have been playing very good baseball. And, you know, all year the standings have been kind of bunched up. And, you know, no one's really pulling ahead. So, you know, all these games we got to fight and keep to the top as close as we can.
Okay. Now, we always talk about the talent in your outfield. Including you, but there are some young players who really have some talent and maybe an excess of talent, so you had to put some guys on the farm even. But Tanaka was the top rookie player for the Pacific League last year. Tatsumi is playing really good. You got Okoye and some other guys on the farm. So how do you evaluate this this outfield as being one of the guys who's looking for some time out there to run around and catch some balls?
I mean, we definitely have some depth, especially with Wada coming in. You know, he's swinging the bat very well. And Cole, you know, he plays some very good outfield. So I would say we definitely have some depth in that area.
Okay. Now, they say hitting is contagious, but also I always seem to think that a team that's really in good sync, that the not hitting is contagious sometimes too. The slumps, you go into a slump as a team sometimes. Have you seen that to be the case?
I mean, it's throughout my career, it's been that way. You know, when guys around you swinging the bat, when you're swinging the bat, it all seems easy, like it comes to you. And, you know, when the main guys in lineup is grinding, you know, it seems to extend throughout the whole lineup. But except to Mogi, you know, that guy's been on fire all year. You know, he's really been the heart of this lineup, and he's having an awesome year.
Yeah, I love that. I call him Mogi Bear. I love that kid's swing.
Awesome ball player.
Yeah, really good player. All right. So how do you break out of that kind of funk that you guys were in? You lost some games before you came in here last night and won 10-0. You had lost some games and you guys weren't hitting. How do you break out of that?
You know, I think, you know, our schedule is tough. You know, from what I see with the travel. And it's just finding ways to regroup and get some rest, and because you know, exhaustion is a key factor to a lot of this game. But you know, we just hit a funk where I think we weren't playing our best, and you know kind of regrouped and came back and, you know, found our footing again.
All right, now, do you try to watch? I asked this to Zealous a long time ago. Do you try to watch some of the highlights and see what the other teams are doing each night?
I mean, here and there, you know, especially when, you know, I like watching Soft Bank play. You know, I like watching Matsuda play. That's one of my favorite players here in Japan. So I like to catch the highlight reel here and there to see which teams are hot, especially when we're going into that series.
Right.
You know, but, you know, we're all here to win, and, you know, I enjoy watching baseball. So, you know, every now and then I do watch some of the highlight reels.
Okay. Now, I remember when we did meet before, we talked about the fact that you had played with the Angels. Do you watch any of the Ohtani games since they're on TV a lot over here?
Ohtani games are always on the TV, so, you know.
And that's why I wish, like, you would have gone somewhere I really, really wanted to see.
It's like a love-hate situation, you know. I have a lot of friends on that team, you know.
Well, he's one of the reasons you're here as well, right?
Yeah, I have a lot of friends that plays with the Angels, and, you know, now I'm in Japan, you know, watching American baseball. It's more interesting, but I have a love-hate with watching the Angels game.
Me too. I'm a Dodger fan, so I have a big love-hate with it. All right, one last question. I know you're from the Virgin Islands. Who's your favorite athlete from there?
Tim Duncan. You know, he's just with his accomplishments.
It's my twin brother, you know that.
I mean, you could resemble him a little bit, but, you know, just with his accomplishments, it's something that anyone leaving the Virgin Islands in the athletics would like to replicate and have that kind of success abroad. So, you know, hats off to him. And, you know, he's always a big name growing up, you know, being from the territory, and he does a lot in the community at home, so.
All right. Well, you do a lot here on the field, and we wish you luck.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot, man. We appreciate it.
All right. Thanks again, Jay Barry. Really enjoyed talking to you, and really appreciate that.
Yeah, it was good to hear your voice again. I hadn't seen you in a long time, so I'm glad you're playing more than you were last time I saw you.
Yeah, that's true. Now, you know, you can tell there's something there with the Angels, you know, and he said it at the very end that it's very hard to watch the games, and it's hard for me because I'm not really a big on the Angels. I just want to see Ohtani do well, but yeah, otherwise that's a bad team, and I don't want to be wasting my time watching those games so much every day.
Having wasted his time on the Dodgers for so many years.
That's not a waste of time. They win. Anyway, except for the big games, but they do win a lot of games. But anyway, what stood out for you?
Well, I heard echoes of the conversation we had in March, in which we talked a lot about food.
Yeah, that's important.
It is important. And as soon as, and he's, Jabari's really into sushi. And so he's got two gurus on that team. And this wasn't in the conversation, but one of his comfort food guru is Zealous Wheeler.
That makes sense.
And I'm kind of, I know I'm misstating a little bit, JB, but I'll simplify it. And the sushi guru is Frank Herman. Gotcha. Because as soon as you said, I'm really into sushi, I'm really a sushi connoisseur, I thought him. And then I thought about Zealous, who was like, who kind of put his first half of the first half of his first season troubles on the fact that he had trouble with the diet, with the food he was able to eat.
Gotcha. Hey, I can totally understand. Right.
And so as soon as I thought about that, I'm thinking, wow, you and Zealous, that's not. And he says, no, it's not like that at all. It's like, I love going out with Zealous to eat. So, which is, I probably would too, because he's such a wonderful, energetic guy, even if non-specific.
Right, gotcha.
So there's that. So I heard that echo. And the other one is I love the question about the batting stance, because it's not dissimilar to another very unique stance we had a long time ago in Japan, who was Julio Franco. Had a very similar stance to that.
Okay, but I'm not seeing it. I'm not with you on that one.
You don't see the bat held over his head and pointed at the picture?
The bat, but not the legs close together.
No, not the legs. No, so, it's yeah. It's more with the bat. No, his legs were different. So, but yeah. But that
one element,
bat,
one component of
yeah, one element of it. But that's okay. A pretty unusual part. And you'll have to understand that when Julio Franco was doing it, that this was before the Ichiro kick took off. And pretty much every Japanese hitter was a carbon copy. They stood stock still in the batting, in the batter's box, and they stepped forward and they hit.
Okay.
And now it's like, it's every man for himself. It's like, because I remember Julio Franco going on TV and them saying, you know, Japanese coaches wouldn't let you hit like that.
Yeah, I could imagine that too.
Days have changed. Things have changed. So anyway, I enjoyed that. That was a great question. And the other one I would just comment on is talking about the outfield was kind of interesting too, because and he mentioned two guys who was Ko Shimozuru.
Okay, yes.
Who's an older journeyman that the Eagles acquired from the Hiroshima Carp in a trade. Who's
right.
He's 30 something, but he's fast and he's energetic. He's one of these gritty, grinding guys. You know, doesn't have a lot of pop, but plays really hard. You know, managers love him, coaches love him. They may not have the best numbers, but everybody loves him.
Gotcha.
And the other guy was Ren Wada, who I can't shut up about.
Shut up about him.
Yeah. So we've all heard about him. So. Anyway, those were the things I just wanted to mention, and it was great hearing them. So how about you? What would you like to emphasize?
Well, you know, I think he really could have gone into a lot of detail. And in fact, the first time I asked him about his batting stance, he got into some real specific stuff that started to lose me, because it was so detailed and he talked about the head movement, but I think he really summed it up very succinctly in this instance. But I came away thinking about that head movement and how you see a lot of players with their heads moving when they start their mechanics or in the middle of their mechanics for their swing, and some guys tilting the head. And so it really has made me watch a lot of heads, keep my eye on the heads instead of the ball this past week, just thinking about how he explained that whole thing. So yeah, that was certainly something that it would seem that you would change, you would make adjustments when you come to Japan, because we've heard so many and including in the 8+ seasons we've been doing the show, the guys talk about making adjustments and getting their timing with these Japanese pitchers. And mm-hmm. him to just say, "Nah, I'm pretty comfortable in what I do." He even said that about the fact that even in remembering and trying to figure out all the pitchers, he said, "Nah, I'm not really worried about so much about adjusting to what they're doing. I'm just going to try to do what I do and just do it better here." And so I found that interesting. And then, you know, I love what he said about the team slash catcher approach to mm-hmm. how teams pitching, because a lot of times when we hear about guys who have success here in Japan, that's what we hear. That seems to be a common theme, that they're talking mm-hmm. about the catchers, not the pitchers so much. Particularly, I think we first heard it on the show with Alex Ramirez about how he tried to remember each of the catchers. But we also heard Boomer Wells tell us that years ago,
yep.
that he would not be paying so much attention to what was going on. Then when he saw how their teams were pitching him, he'd look back and say, "Oh, it's the young catcher today, not the older one." And so I think we've heard a common theme, or there's a common thread with some of the guys who've been successful here. And so I thought that was really good. And obviously, him having played for the Angels and watching TV so much, I thought, this is really interesting. We don't ever hear, at least I've never heard, a current player point out another current player and say, "He's one of my favorite players to watch in Japan." And I mean, they tell us about guys they respect, they tell us about guys who maybe they like, but he's talking about Nobuhiro Matsuda as one of his favorite players. Like, he just tries to catch all of those 1-foot hopping foul ball swings that he makes, and is really enjoying watching the guy play. I was shocked.
I wonder. I think secretly that Jabari Blush wants to do a home run celebration where he hops on 1 foot and spins around.
Hashtag high heat.
No, maybe not.
Homage.
Indeed.
There's my man. So I mean, I've heard other guys pay compliments to players, or he's a great player, blah blah blah. But
he's such a likable guy. I mean, I find the hopping kind of annoying. I never found it annoying when he batted, but I sure found it annoying when it became part of his trademark.
Ah, man.
His home run celebration, I find that quite annoying. Yeah. But otherwise, he's just kind of a high energy guy, and he likes everybody to know it.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. Well, I like him too. I'm not sure that that the hopping part and the home run celebration is all that genuine, but he does it.
No, it's not genuine. It's
cool. Whatever, you know. But I've just not heard another player say that about another player. And I found that really, really interesting to say, you know, "He's my favorite player." I've never heard those words.
Interesting.
Yeah, I've heard different phrasings, but not that phrase.
I have to think about that. It hadn't occurred to me. I mean, I get people, you do ask people, you know, what players they like to watch. And we either get
the usual, you know, suspects.
The sort of zealous Wheelers, you know, guys.
Right.
or we get a list. That's right, the ones wearing cleats. You know who I'm talking about.
Yeah. Guys.
Sorry, Z, I love you.
We love you, Z.
But the other one is the where you get a list. Oh, there's this guy and that guy and that guy and that guy. So for him to come out and say, "Bam, this is the guy," is quite distinct.
Right. Right. Okay. All right. Well, let's make some distinctions about the Eagles and the way they've been playing. So they started out really strong. They had a really good May. So did Jabari. He had a really great May, but they have slowed down as he has the past 2 months. And yeah, I looked at the pitchers. I thought, let me go and look up and see who has the most wins. And of course, it's Manabu Mimon with 7. Mm-hmm. But as we talked about the top two pitchers, Takahiro Norimoto, the guy called Nori Nori, who had some elbow procedure done before the season and is just now getting back. And I would say he's in his spring training phase at the moment, so he's working himself back into shape and into midseason form. And then Takayuki Kishi, whom I saw back in May at Cebu or MetLife, and I thought he was going to be pitching soon. And I think the last time he has pitched was July 10th, and he's only pitched in 8 games so far. And so they need Kishi back and right and pitching, obviously, and they need Norimoto to be himself or be some version of himself, which I can see. I can see by the end of this month he could be back and be that ace guy that they need. But they have done a great job, in my opinion, with the other guys, Wataru Karashima, whom they've got pitching out of the bullpen occasionally. Sometimes I think tonight on Sunday he came out and it was not a save situation, but he came out of the bullpen again. I saw him pitch before out of the bullpen. But they've got some issues. They lost a game the other day where they could have wrapped it up if they could have gotten some outs, and they didn't get the key outs. In fact, a home run spoiled Frank Herman's outing the other day, and I don't know that it was a bad pitch. It was just, you know, sometimes you throw the ball near the plate, you throw fastballs near the plate, sometimes they get hit, and that's what happened there.
I've heard that.
Yeah, I've heard that. I've seen it. But I think they've done a good job overall. I mean, when Mima is your leading, your wins leader along with Karashima, I think, and again, it's only 7. But it says a lot about your team
But Mima has pitched. I mean, I've watched him pitch 3 games where he was just really, you know, he's becoming a kind of Tsuyoshi Wada type.
Mm-hmm.
Just really, really feisty and stubborn. You know, he's going to make his pitch, and he doesn't really concern himself too much with what the count is. Or, you know, if it's 3-2 and I'm not, you know, I'm falling behind, I'm not going to give in. I'm just going to keep going, and I'm just going to keep trying to execute my pitches as best I can. I'm not going to plan B.
Mm.
But really dogged. And, of course, that only works if you have, you know, pretty good command, which he has had this year. But I really enjoy watching. He's, you know, he's one of those guys who I'm beginning to really enjoy watching. It's pitch, not because his stuff is outstanding, but because he has really good command of usually 2 or 3 different pitches.
That's true.
And the thing about Tsuyoshi Wada is he absolutely knows what he wants to do, and it's almost like he doesn't care what you're trying to do. I'm just gonna do what I can, and you try to keep up. Even though he's throwing 89 miles an hour.
Right.
I mean, so.
Right. So in the meantime, recently I think there's a 25-year-old rookie who has just been lights out in his past couple starts or past couple efforts, and that's Hayato Yuge. And he blanked the Lions over 7 innings on Tuesday. The night before I went out to talk to Jabari, and that was a 10-0 win for the Eagles. And before that, he shut out Nippon Ham 2-0, and that was July 30th. A 2-hitter with 1 walk and 4 strikeouts. So not dominating, not a guy you expect to continue on in this vein of shutting teams down and shutting teams out. But his first start was April 4th, and he had runners all over the place, all over the bases. He still only gave up 1 run, but they, yeah.
Rookie's first start, okay.
Yeah, yeah, yes, exactly. And so I want to keep an eye on him and see what he does. And then Shu Sugihara, he threw on Saturday against the Buffaloes. He's another young pitcher I like. I think I actually talked about him in preseason that I really liked him, and I thought they were going to use him out of the bullpen, but they were starting him and giving him some starts. And before we started taping, you were telling me about the number of first-year guys they've given innings to.
Which is 5, but the big one is Ryota Ishibashi.
Mm.
Who's nothing special. Again, none of these guys are anything. You're not going to look at their stuff and say, okay, this guy's got a big future. Or I should say, I'm being harsh because I've watched Yuge pitch a little bit, and I've watched Ishibashi pitch a little bit, but I haven't been overwhelmed. You know, they don't strike guys out.
Right.
So I like Yuge. He's an older guy. He seems to know what he's doing. He's coming out of the corporate leagues. So he's really, you know, where you would hope a pitcher like that would be. And we see these guys, sometimes they're pretty useful for a number of years, not a long time. Tomo Yayagi was a guy like that. He was a 25 or 26 year old rookie, and he knew what he was doing
for the Fighters.
And, you know, once he with the Nippon Ham Fighters, and he pitched. He had a couple of decent seasons, and then boom, gone. He didn't throw really hard, but maybe Yuge will become like Yagi.
You hope he's a little bit better than that.
Well, Yagi was pretty good. I mean, he was good, but he just wasn't good for a long time.
Yeah, he wasn't.
So that's...
Yeah, he was great one year and then good a couple years, and then all of a sudden, yep. It's like, how'd this guy get in here? Security!
Well, well, teams sometimes want these guys. They want now help, as Trey Hillman said. We wanted him because he's now help. He can help us this year.
Right. So, I like what the Eagles had a really hot start. It seemed like they were winning games they shouldn't have been winning, and that I say that to mean maybe they were, like you were talking about earlier, they were running themselves out of innings on the bases. They didn't hit a lot of home runs, but somehow at the end of the game, they were on top, and they stacked up a lot of victories, and they've kind of slowed down. I would say since June, and they don't seem to be hitting on all cylinders yet. They're right there in the pennant chase. They won tonight, playing against the Oryx Buffaloes. They struggled because they lost the previous night, but they bounced back with a big inning and won the game tonight on Sunday. So I like their chances. They seem to have enough balance in scoring, enough balance in the pitching. Just sometimes they have a bullpen blow up, or they have a starting pitcher who blows up, and they don't seem to be able to overcome it. But there's a lot of
Their offense, as I pointed out earlier in the season, their offense was very efficient, except for losing runners on base. But they've completely sort of it's almost like they haven't. I'm sure they do have analysts with the Eagles.
I bet.
I know because you know they're a high tech company,
right?
But they're an internet company. But somebody went to the manager and said, "Look, you'd be better team if the guys weren't making three outs a game on the bases."
Exactly.
And so they said. You know, and I'm and maybe there was this conversation because since May, basically, they haven't lost a lot of runners on the bases, and they've decided we're going to let Oryx do that instead.
Oh, I see. Oryx has taken over. Well, yeah, that makes all the sense in the world. The Buffalonian thing to do. But I tell you this, the Thursday game against with the Eagles against the Lions, they gave up a home run. I think they scored a run in extra innings to take a 7-6 lead. Gave up a home run. I think it was Kimura who hit two home runs that night, one of them off of Frank Herman. And then he tied it in the 10th with a solo home run. Then the Eagles scored four runs off of that Lions bullpen without the benefit of a hit.
Well, that was the bullpen. That was Kyle Martin, really. I mean, he made an error and walked a bunch of guys and
it was
a nightmare of an inning.
It wasn't
the whole bullpen.
It wasn't the whole bullpen.
No.
Okay. Anyway, those kinds of things can happen, and you can have those kinds of things. But I just think that the whole situation in the Pacific League is just different than it has been. It's a different dynamic than it has been in recent years, where a lot of these games, and I don't want to say even, but the Marines are right there as well. So you got the Marines with 50 wins. You've got the Eagles with 52 wins. Also, the Fighters have 52 wins, and the Lions with 53. So all those teams, I would say, are
in contention for a playoff spot. Now it doesn't look like it doesn't look like the Eagles or the Marines will be there, but they could be there just as easily as the Lions or the Fighters. So it's going to be really fun watching these games down the stretch. And let's talk a little bit about the other teams in the Pacific League. And I'm looking at the Marines. And again, thank you, Jabari, and thank you for the thank you to the Eagles staff members who helped us out with that interview, because they made sure we got back together after they broke up the interview the first time. So thank you very much for all those to all those guys. Now the Marines have, you know, obviously addressed their lack of power, because I always talked about, I often talked about the past, I don't know, three seasons, I think, in the prediction shows about how they needed three hits to get a run, and or at least, you know, a hit, a stolen base, and another hit, so at least two, with some extenuating circumstances to score runs. And now they've addressed their lack of power this season. They are second in the Pacific League in home runs, yet the, you know, they really hasn't bumped up their scoring, and they're still not in right now sitting in a playoff spot. So what did you notice about the Marines and their home runs?
Well, yeah, I mean, I was playing this sort of mind game with myself. John put Marines home runs, and instead of like asking what the heck he meant.
Yeah, these are in the show notes that I send to him each week.
Yeah, I'm going, wonder what John meant by that. So I just started poking around for Marines home runs. What I found out, and I thought, we did have this, okay, mind you, we did have this discussion in May, I believe, about why the Marines were not, when you did the Brandon Laird interview, why the Marines weren't scoring as many runs with all the home runs. And I don't quite see it. I don't know. I don't really think there's a disconnect. But the Marines are hitting, they're hitting more home runs than their opponents. The surprise I had was that they're hitting more home, that more home runs are hit in their road games than in their home games.
Wow.
So even though, so basically,
lagoon that.
yes, indeed. Who would have thunk it? But what that tells me is that their park, while it is a much better home run park than it used to be a nightmare, and now it's a, it's almost a neutral park. Okay, so there's that. But the other thing that was I found, although I'm certain it just comes as trivia, Marines trivia.
Okay. We used to do that.
Yep. Okay. Well, this one is, you know, I was thinking, well, maybe the Marines don't hit a lot of, you know, they hit an unusual proportion of their home runs with nobody on. And in fact, they do hit more empty bases, empty home runs than proportionally they should. But on the other hand, they hit also quite a lot more grand slams than they should.
Okay.
So they've got six grand slams. I guess they should have four otherwise, considering, you know, the when you look at how often they have runners when the bases are full.
So how often is that?
Share of, it's
well, I shouldn't say how often,
about,
how many.
It's a three, it's 118 times. It's 3% of the times guys come up.
118 times with the bases loaded this season. Wow.
Is about 3%, and they should be hitting, so they should be hitting 3% of their home runs with the bases loaded, but in fact they're sitting close to 5%, which is a couple of grand slams more. But the interesting one is that their the Marines pitchers this year have not allowed a grand slam.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Which I find.
how many opportunities have they had giving up?
110.
110 and zero. So that's. They're above.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, they're still. Yeah, don't go looking at the Marines like they're the next version of Masahiro Tanaka, and they're not going to allow a hit or an RBI or something with the bases loaded like he did forever in Sendai, because they've done well. They've done, but their opponents have not done really well with runners in scoring position. But the Marines have done better than their opponents in that position. So anyway, that's just trivia. I don't know. It means a whole heck of a lot, but.
Yeah, but it's interesting stuff, and I'm looking around the Pacific League. I've noticed there, well, actually both leagues, but in particular, in fact, I heard it on the radio tonight. They were talking about the fact that Cebu moved Hotaka Yamakawa out of the cleanup spot, and it was the first time in about 2 years he hadn't hit cleanup. And then Takuya Nakamura, Okawari-kun was back in the cleanup spot, and they were making a big deal about that. But there have been some other lineup changes, I think, throughout NPB in probably this past week even. And I saw Yusuke Oyama of the Tigers. You know, I never saw him. I think I badmouthed him early on last year, saying I really don't see anything here.
You make it sound like you badmouthed him once.
Oh, okay. I badmouthed.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. You're not a Hanshin Tigers blogger. Oh,
okay.
My mistake.
All right. No, I'm not. But I said I don't see this guy as a future cleanup hitter, and. But I think he can be, you know, he looks like a good number three if he can manage to be more consistent with driving the ball and getting some of these. He pops a lot of balls up that he just misses. And if he can get on top of some of those pitches and then drive them, I think he'll get that batting average up. And I could see him as a good number three. But anyway, he was dropped down to the sixth spot, and that's when he won a game on Saturday night. For the Tigers.
Yeah, they made a big as they do, they make a big deal about when guys get dropped out of their regular spot in the batting order and do well.
But he did too. He actually said in the Hero interview, he said, well, you know, I felt a little bit of frustration and took it out, you know, in the game on the opponent. And I'm thinking, well, that's pretty mature. You know, and the walk-off home run, and that helped the Tigers win. And
Those do.
It was a big hit to help the Tigers win. Let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've had some lineup jumbling by Alex Ramirez. That it seems like every time he does some little thing with the lineup, it draws a lot of attention. I don't know
if it's
criticism or what happens, but he's...
I think it's criticism.
Really, yeah, he's having to be really creative with... and I think we talked about the fact that Toshiro Miyazaki is going to be out, broke that hamate bone in his hand this past week, and Alex Ramirez had to be very creative, or a little bit creative, or somewhat creative in his lineup and in his moves. And I don't know... Yeah, I remember, and you can vouch for this, because it was you who, like, turned me on to the idea of Yoshitomo Tsugo being a future star when we were at Yokohama together, and I'm pretty sure it was Tsugo's rookie season, and you really wanted to talk to him. You were, like, really, really anxious to talk to him and trying to get a hold of him, and I'm like, why are you trying to talk to this guy? He's nothing yet. And at that time, I don't even remember if Tsutsugo was registered as a catcher / infielder, but it just seemed to me that he was not a left fielder. And left field is a place where you put the guy who can't really do anything in the first place. Well, that's the way the major leagues handle that position. They're not really looking for athletes. They put their second baseman out there. I'm sorry, their second first baseman out there and just say, hey, look, you're going to be fielding some hits. You're going to be catching some easy fly balls, or you're going to be watching home runs. But you don't really have to do very much in that spot. So, and I remember them moving to go out to left. And I thought, why are they putting this catcher in the outfield? That was my thought. But
was a huge guy. I mean, even with 18, I mean, he was huge for an 18-year-old. And I was really interested. I watched him swing, and I thought, wow, this guy's going to have some pomp. And Alex Ramirez was telling me when Alex joined DeNA, he was going like, man, this kid is going to be, what a great hitter. And he was working with him. And as soon as he started working with Alex Ramirez, it's like he took off.
Uh-huh.
Except there's a lot to that story that's very complicated.
Yes, because I remember some of the details.
Indeed, but I'll cut it short, but basically saying that manager Kiyoshi Nakahata was not keen on the fact that Tsutsugo's career took off after Alex Ramirez started talking with him.
We'll leave it at that. So, yeah.
And the details are sketchy afterwards. And Alex very diplomatically said, it wasn't my place to be talking in between the player and the coach.
And that's true.
Yep, that is true. And so that happened.
So my point is that I recognize that Tsutsugo started out as, was it catcher?
I think a third baseman.
Or just third baseman. Okay, but I know he was registered.
I don't remember him catching.
Okay, well, he was registered early on as an infielder. So mm-hmm. when he was moved to third base, there was shock and awe along Twitter and other social media platforms. And I'm like, no, this guy, no, he could play. He can play the infield. In fact, I remember seeing him take ground balls earlier in his career out there at third. So, you know, the criticism and the things that Ramirez draws as a foreign manager, I think is unfair.
It is essentially, and I'm going to say it, it's basically because he's a foreigner.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when Hideki Kuriyama uses an opener, they go like, I don't like this opener stuff. But, you know, it's Kuriyama. It's kind of, it's a clever guy. Other managers couldn't make it work, but he's a clever guy, so it's okay.
Right.
But Alex Ramirez, that's an insult. That's an insult to Japanese baseball, is what they said to and so when Tsutsugo was moved from the cleanup spot, because he wasn't hitting home runs, but he was getting on base, and so Alex Ramirez said, okay, just get on base then. Don't worry about the home runs. So go bat second. And Yoshiaki Kanemura said, well, that's an insult to Japanese baseball, because, and it makes me sick, because you can't do that to the Japan national team cleanup hitter. And of course, it lasted for a week or so, and everybody pretty much bad-mouthed it, which they also bad-mouthed Alex for batting his pitcher's eighth, which if anybody's curious and they want to look at my website and see what I measured, how many runs batting the pitcher's eighth improved the DNA offense last in 2017. So,
and that's all you
which was about 10 runs.
Wow. So, don't really put much stock a lot of times into the things that some of these old-timey guys say. I just know that they're out there spouting off, and they do have a platform, and people listen, and a lot of people think like that, so that's fine. But I think you're right. Creativity is in the eye of the beholder sometimes. Ramirez is being creative with working with what he has. And Kuriyama is being creative, working with things the way he wants to work with them, because he has an option. I don't think Ramirez has an option. So,
no, he doesn't. But that's why when they finished, he could bat his pitcher's eighth, which makes perfect sense.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody, it's batting your pitcher eighth is a lot like going for, if you're an American football fan, and I hate to use American football analogies, but it's like going for fourth down
mm-hmm.
In the middle of the field, or in most situations where
in your own territory,
where football head coaches in the NFL will punt
when they need
it's the standard move. It's a standard move. It doesn't make sense, but it's what everybody does. It's conventional wisdom. Anyway, so batting your pitcher eighth is going to help you pick up a few extra runs a year.
Mm-hmm.
But because nobody does it, it's wrong.
Gotcha.
So anyway, and he did it in 2017, and it worked like a charm, and he went to the Japan Series, and then he went 2018, the Bay Stars didn't finish in the playoffs. So, you know what happened? Get rid of the pitcher.
Yeah,
you have to get rid of the pitcher. Now, he said it was his decision, but I'm guessing somebody put pressure on him not to do it because it, I don't know, as you know, to atone for not finishing third or something. I don't know.
Right, put the pitcher back in the nine hole. Yeah, well, they're making a good push. The loss of Miyazaki is big, but
it is.
And we will see. A lot of times when you lose a good player, my philosophy has always been: on a baseball team, if you lose one guy, and that's your excuse for losing games, then you weren't a good team to begin with. You were just a bunch of guys around one really good player, so I don't think it's a huge impact to lose one guy, and I think guys get a boost right away early on when you lose a major player, but it's going to take the whole village to make up the difference or to
fill in the gap while he's gone, so it's going to take a little bit more work. But they, you know, they started out this past week, they start out real strong, but we'll see if they can keep it up.
The interesting thing was that as soon as he went out, of course, Tsutsugo went back into the second spot. He's hit three home runs in the second spot since he's been put at third base. And the guy who took Tsutsugo's spot in left field is Seiya Hosokawa, who Ramichan's been trying to get in the lineup for like 2 years, but he's got really no place to play him. He's not a fast outfielder. And then the guy he played at second base, who made his starting debut at second base on Saturday night, was Yukiya Ito.
Yes.
Yeah, their second base, their second draft pick out of college, out of university. And he slugged two home runs in his first debut. So it's almost like if you're willing to be different, if you're willing to be Alex Ramirez or you're willing to be Hideki Kurayama, somebody gets hurt, it's an opportunity to do something that nobody else would otherwise let you do.
Right.
So more power to both of those guys. Exactly. Be creative, change the game, go for it. Yep. We're enjoying it.
Yep. And one more note on the Bay Stars. Spencer Patton, their right-handed relief pitcher, who we joked about on the show last week about his right-left-right combination to the midsection of the refrigerator in the dugout, ended up with a broken bone in his hand, and he's going to miss some time. So they've got a couple injuries, but we'll see if they can hang on and keep that push toward the top and keep the pressure on the Giants, and keep the carpet bay, and see if they can hold on to that second spot at least, or even make a push for that first spot without those guys. Making a four-seam transition, there was talk around the All-Star game, and I actually had this note on our show notes for a couple 3 weeks here, and I want to try to get to it. And that's the idea or the notion of the electronic umpires. Now, I've called it a misnomer that they're saying robot umpires, and I didn't see any robots. I saw cameras, I saw computers, but I didn't see any robots. And until I see R2-D2 or C-3PO behind the plate doing their strikeout dance, I'm going to call them electronic umpires. I'm going to call them electronic umpires. But we know that MPB likes to mimic MLB with the rule changes. And if ever MLB goes to this electronic umpire situation or whatever we want to call them, do you think it'll be long before we see that in MPB as well?
Well, I think they might, you know, given the way they've handled the replay system, which and I want to be positive.
Okay, try.
Is with the replay system is vastly better than it was when there was no replay system.
Okay.
Because then all the bad calls stayed the same.
That's true.
Now, but now it's pretty much all the bad calls get overturned because they're bad.
The bad ones.
And I think we're seeing fewer bad calls. But the close calls, the annoying thing is the close calls that look close on the field and then look horribly, then like not so close on replay, are not getting overturned because the owners have decided that they want the umpires to look at on these tiny little studio monitors.
Yes.
They're about the size of the palm of their hands.
Tiny as little, but yes.
Yep, and they can't see. And so with that clue, probably what they'll do with the robot umpires is have a very high-tech pitch tracking system, and then give the umpires, you know, say whether it's a strike or a ball in their earpiece, but give them earpieces that are so poor in quality that they can't actually hear it.
So they'll have to call the strikes and balls and strikes on their own anyway.
Exactly, because it's inaudible. So they've got video replays that are
unseeable,
that are unwatchable, and then they'll have strike calls that are inaudible.
Yeah,
that'll be NPB.
Yeah, well, you know, and I know they've started using, or they're going to start using TrackMan. So we know that that's part of the...
They are. TrackMan had been in 11 of the major parks in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And it's now going to be in 12 because from next year they're going to use it to give the umpires feedback of their strike zones.
Right. And that's good. That I mean...
I think that is good.
The feedback is good, but I think when the umpires watch video, they'll... That's enough feedback. They can see when they've missed pitches, and it happens, and they miss them, and we all know it happens. So
I think the Japanese umpire, you know, I think a lot of the Japanese umpires are pretty good.
They're good. No,
I think they are good, and I think the reason they're good is because they don't have this attitude of whatever I call a strike is a strike, and go stuff it if you don't like it.
Right. Tighten it up.
Exactly. You know, whatever it is they are in the box, that's what they are in the box.
Yeah. So, in general, I'm just not a favor of slowing any sports down to 1/1000th of a second to make calls. That's just crazy for me to think about. But if we can get the balls and strike... And, you know, I saw a close pitch. It was a bunch of Twitteyits out there were outraged about it, but... they were sending around a close pitch that this electronic umpire had called a strike. And if you look at the pitch, it's borderline. And what's the difference between a human making the borderline call and a computer making a borderline call? There is none. So
yeah, well, they did a study of it, and I cannot recall whether it was. I want to say it was in the California Winter League. It might have been in the Palm Springs Winter League, but the electronic strike zone was, you know, missed basically about 10% as many pitches as the umpires missed. 10%. Which is to say the umpires make 90% of the correct calls, and the electronic umpires were making 99% of the correct calls.
Okay. Gotcha. Well, you know, if it can be translated and conveyed in a timely manner, because we don't want to slow the game down for balls and strikes.
They give you an earpiece, and you hear whether it beeps if it's a strike.
Right. Okay. In theory, but we know.
And then you call the pitch.
Yeah, we know about.
Of course, that. In Japan, you would hear silence. It's a hearing test. Oh, was that? Did they set the pitch frequency? Sorry, we've only issued you earphones for dogs.
Right. What's the frequency, Kenneth? All right. Let's move
exactly.
on. Let's move on. We've got a couple more notes. Now, just one note of significance for me, and that was in the Players of the Month. And I think we got them basically right. We got 2 out of 4, I think.
Yeah, we were blindsided by one of them.
Yeah, Oryx's Taisuke Yamaoka was 3-1, and he had 37 strikeouts and an ERA of 3.09 in July, and so yeah, he ended up being the pitcher.
He was okay. Yeah, that's a reasonable pick,
and
I think.
And I think Masataka Yoshida was a clear batter in the PL, and then the Central League nailed it with Yasuaki Yamasaki of DeNA. The reliever, but
which is about the first time I've ever got a reliever right.
Yeah, it's hard to do, but when you don't have a lot of great candidates among the starters, that's exactly where they go, and that's exactly where they had to go. But you and I were blindsided by the choice of Jose Lopez, and he hit .271 in July, and he had the most RBIs and the most home runs, and so that's why he got it, and that's it.
Yeah,
and it was weird.
Well.
What was it?
And
eight
I'll
home
say,
runs
it's
and 28
weird.
RBIs?
Right, yes, 28 RBIs. And I, you know, I've seen worse picks.
Not
and,
recently.
And I'll throw them out there. Yoichi Adachi a couple of years ago hit 400 of the Oryx, the shortstop for the Oryx Buffaloes hit 400 without any extra bases, and I think he drew one walk all month. So he had an on-base percentage.
And he drew
that
walk on a piece of paper, right, in the dugout.
Oh, bad, bad, John. Bad, bad, John. Go sit in the corner for that one. Yeah, okay. So anyway, he had a 400 average and a 401 on-base percentage.
Right.
Right, so it was basically the emptiest 400 average you could possibly have. And there were other people who had much better months, but here Jose Lopez was not the fact that he didn't produce, and he did, and I like that. But you had guys who were hitting 400 who actually had good months, who had
productive months
on top. Yeah, yeah, who hit 400 with power, who drew walks. You know, Hayato Sakamoto and Yoshiyuki Kame were both better choices than... Now, Jose Lopez had a marvelous month. I don't want to badmouth him by saying he had a bad month. He had a marvelous month.
No, there were a couple of guys that had better months. I don't think it was marvelous, but it was productive.
Well, no, but it was
marvelous,
yeah,
in terms of the power numbers, but...
Sure, sure. He helped his team win, and that's what you can do, but I don't want to say he had the best... I wouldn't have put him in the top three, but that's just me talking, so...
He definitely was not on my radar either. Okay. All right, let's go to fielding.
Which makes it wrong. If they're not on our radar, they're wrong.
Okay.
Also, all right. Was I not supposed to say that?
Okay. No, you're all right. All right, let's go to fielding questions. All right, this week's question is an email. It comes from Roger in Tokyo, and he says, which NPB teams have lots of money to spend? The Giants, and then, of course, SoftBank. But then after that, I really have no idea. Could you give me a ranking, even just informally, of the MPB teams in terms of wealthy slash ability to spend money on a player slash payroll, ability to sign free agents? Thanks again, and keep up the great work. I listen every week. Thank you very much, Roger. And, you know, these teams, the rich teams, you are correct. SoftBank is number one in terms of last year, and the Giants are number two. And I have a list from last year of the teams that had the highest payrolls.
Mm-hmm.
Now you made a.
Well, I think that's pretty representative. I think Conchine's going to be three.
Yes.
After that, it gets a little murky, because then you have the teams that, you know, it's sort of like the haves and the have-nots, and who knows who's in between. The have-nots really the Chunichi Dragons now.
Yes, that's correct. Let me go through the list real quick. It's published in from 2018's
salary. So this is the union play. This is the union players, and this is not the foreign players either.
Right. This only includes the union players. Okay. So SoftBank spent the most, and it was the Yomiuri Giants, the Hanshin Tigers. Fourth was the Yakult Swallows. Next, Hiroshima Carp. After that, DeNA BayStars. Next, the Cebu Lions. Then you've got the Fighters, the Eagles, the Buffaloes, the Marines, and last, the Chunichi Dragons. So yeah, the Chunichi Dragons have the least. And I don't know if it's just that they're not spending money, because the Yomiuri is a newspaper as well. Yet they're spending about twice as much money on the baseball team.
But the Giants make a lot more money from their baseball team.
Oh, definitely. From their baseball team, yes. Yeah, from the newspaper.
The newspaper
as well.
Newspaper business is not good.
No.
And so when the newspaper business went south, Chunichi stopped paying for buying free agents. They're basically getting all their foreign players are coming from Dominican Republic and Latin America.
Right.
So the Hiroshima Carp are probably higher on that list now than they used to be. Their spending is really going into their minor league development. They're going to be one of the big spenders, I think, before long.
Yeah,
Yakult being a big spender is interesting. I wasn't aware of that.
No, I didn't think they would be, but I'm also surprised to see a tech giant like Rakuten being ninth. That's surprising.
Nice. Yeah, it's funny because Rakuten as a ownership group, the Rakuten Corporation, Rakuten Holdings is they're very in tune on return of investment. And I think right now they're spending all the money on their football team, on the Vissel Kobe.
Football,
and they're making
soccer.
A huge amount of money by spending a huge amount of money on Vissel Kobe. And I think their thinking is we can make more money per dollar we spend on the football than we can on the baseball right now.
Soccer.
But having said that, Rakuten has invested heavily in their ballpark. Okay. And I think they're making the money, but I think I don't know at what point it's going to turn into success on the field. I think they're going to go that way eventually, but they're you know, they had to build up the size of their stadium.
Right.
Because when they moved in there in 2004, it held about 23,000. And now it holds over 32,000 or something.
Right.
And so they're doing the DNA thing, which is they have the operating rights to their stadium. They're increasing the capacity. They're trying to make sure they've got packed houses every night. This is something SoftBank did 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So they're laying the groundwork for future success.
Now, when do you recall when SoftBank overtook the Giants as the team?
It was about 3 years ago.
Okay, 3 years ago. So, yeah, it had...
But I'll tell you, I had a conversation with somebody from SoftBank, which is irrelevant today, but a friend of mine who works for SoftBank told me when they were planning, they had already decided they were going to build their minor league facility and move it to Chikugo in southern Fukuoka Prefecture. They came to him and said, what kind of facilities I guess is the best. And they went and he said, look, this is the kind of training stuff that every major league team has, at least in their rehab center, absolutely essential. And it's going to cost you twice as much if you decide to put it in later. And he said, I was expecting the Hawks to give me, I was expecting to have to go through a long song and dance to get them to approve it. They said, okay, you got it.
Right, instantly. Snap the fingers. Make
that's
it happen.
The Hawks.
Yeah.
Exactly. Good. It's going to help us. Do it.
Do it. Do it. All right. Well, thank you very much, Roger, for sending the email. Anyone else who has a question, hit us up on Twitter at JBWPodcast with the hashtag HiHeat. Send questions via email to YAKYUJOHN@gmail.com or hit us up on the Facebook page. We will talk to you next week. Thanks for listening and enjoy your baseball.
See you at jballallen.com.